As the hour of the inaugural approached, I recalled the mask maker, Guerino Lovato's explanation of the opera-going experience as a gradually unfolding ritual that began at home with the opera-goer getting dressed. That being the case, my night at the opera started at about the time I was inserting my shirt studs with one hand, holding the telephone receiver with the other, and listening to Ludovico De Luigi pronounce the evening an ignoble farce. "It will be an exercise in vanity, vulgarity, and self-congratulation," he said. "Costa has been boasting that the reopening of the Fenice means the city still has a pulse. It means no such thing. Sadly, Venice is already dead. Everything is based on the exploitation of the corpse, the shameless exploitation of the corpse." De Luigi would not be attending the opening. The temptation to pull off another scherzo would be too great, he said, and the police were already on edge, what with the protesting firemen complicating security. There would be zero tolerance for any sort of spontaneous artistic expression tonight. Anyway, De Luigi had not been invited, and he had no intention of buying a ticket. My opening night ritual unfolded further as I stepped onto the #1 Vaporetto for the ride down the Grand Canal. It had been reported a few days earlier that Enrico Carella had been briefly sighted on a Vaporetto. I spoke with Felice Casson afterwards. "I doubt that the police are really looking for him," Casson said. "If he were a terrorist or a mafia boss of a certain importance, then special search teams would be set up with either the Carabinieri or the police. And then it would be only a matter of time. They have methods that work very well. But they probably don't think Carella is worth the effort. Other more dangerous cases have higher priority." It crossed my mind to pass this information on to Lucia Carella, who would probably have taken it as welcome news. But that would be meddling. Besides, Casson was far too clever. If I repeated what he had told me, Signora Carella might let down her guard and play right into his hands. It was none of my business. In any case, Enrico Carella was not on board the #1 Vaporetto the night of the Fenice reopening. Bright white television lights illuminated Campo San Fantin and the red carpet cascading down the steps of the Fenice. Ahead of me, President Ciampi entered the theater, all but hidden inside a phalanx of Praetorian guards wearing ceremonial helmets topped by horsetails that arched and fell like fountains of white hair. I went directly upstairs to the Dante room, which was now the bar, curious to see how the Inferno fresco had turned out. Laura Migliori and her crew had revived the colors in the surviving segment, sketching the missing figures in outline against a plain background. I was looking at the sketch of Virgil and his laurel wreath when I felt a tug at my elbow. I turned around and confronted a vaguely familiar florid-faced man who was smiling as if he knew me. It was Massimo Donadon, the rat man of Treviso. I had not seen him since the carnival ball in 1996. "Signor Donadon," I said, "how's the rat poison business?" "I'm just back from the Netherlands," he said. "I have new customers." "What's your secret ingredient for Dutch rats?" I asked. "Salmon and cheese," he said. "No Dutch chocolate?" "A little, not much." Donadon's expression suddenly turned serious. "Something very strange is happening in Italy," he said. He motioned for me to move toward the corner of the room where we could hear each other better. "I've noticed," he said, "that in the past few years, Italian rats have begun to prefer eating plastic to Parmesan cheese." "Really? My entire business, if you remember, is based on the idea that rats eat what people eat." "Yes, of course, I remember." "But people don't eat plastic," he said. I thought, my God, I'm ruined. What am I going to do? Rats are beginning to eat food that human beings don't eat. This cannot be true.